I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Here, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, I offer you a safe space if you're an independent thinker out there. Today's Tuesday. We will have a small Tech Tuesday segment. They've got just two stories, one out of Sweden, and then one, I'm going to include this in Tech Tuesday, a global warming climate change story. I believe this is a huge story. It should be anyway. Certainly something that you can share with any of your climate alarmist friends. I've got some. I just ran across the story this morning. I will be forwarding it this afternoon. So stick around for that. Also being Tuesday, tonight, Americans for Prosperity will be having their open house at their office in the Woodlands in Ridgeland. You can find them, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, on Facebook is the best way to find them. You'll get their exact address. I have not done my due diligence and looked it up before I came on air. But tonight from 6 to, I believe, 7:30 tonight, they'll be offering a little bit of food, telling you what Americans for Prosperity does, introducing everybody to the new state director, Starla. I took state director and Starla and put it into the state director. So I've given her a new title. Anyway, Starla will be there tonight. She comes from Florida. She's a Meridian girl. She was on our show last Thursday. She grew up in Meridian and then has been in Florida getting a taste of what real freedom is, and hopefully she's bringing some of that back to Mississippi. So if you want to get involved or meet some of the people at Americans for Prosperity, tonight's a great night to do it. Kind of a come as you go. I think they'll be talking about some things, but it's mostly kind of a meet and greet. So 6 to 7:30 at Americans for Prosperity's office in Ridgeland. I'll be there. The big news of the day yesterday was we took one, and I consider this a pretty small, tiny, yet important step back to some small, tiny level of sanity. And they have removed the mask mandate from public transportation. One judge finally injected some level of personal choice and sanity back into the system and has knocked down the mask mandates. The CDC, the Biden administration has admitted for now, they're going to allow that people to show their face. It has been pretty interesting to watch some of the reaction to that. The airline heads have come out and said that this is a good thing. They've been kind of lobbying to get rid of the mask mandates. I would imagine a lot of the flight attendants are sick of enforcing the mask mandates, and those in flight attendants who are enthusiastic about enforcing the mask mandates probably shouldn't be in a public service position. Many of them may freak out now to see a bare face because they've been broken. Some of the people are permanently insane. The scars left on those who continue to wear the ineffective and ridiculous masks may be completely irreversible. In a world that is constantly exposed to viruses for millions of years now, but these people have been broken. Even some of the medical profession, I was looking at a story about this. I want you to listen to a tweet sent out by a Jeremy Faust. He is a medical doctor, an MS, an ER physician. This is Jeremy Faust in response to removing the mask mandates. He's got his pictures, a little profile picture on Twitter. It's him with the stethoscope around his neck. says, hi, United. When I bought my tickets for me, my wife, who is pregnant, and our unvaccinated four-year-old, I assumed you would continue to have a mask mandate. Now you cancel it, and we will have to board our return flight under your new no-mask required policy. Thanks so much. He is broken. This is a doctor. I'll spend an hour tomorrow from 10 to 11 o'clock explaining to you why many in the medical professional are not to be trusted with your health. Jeremy Faust, Dr. Jeremy Faust, is a good example of that. A hysterical that is now worried about his pregnant wife, an unvaccinated four-year-old. Ooh, I bet he's chomping at the bit to get those vaccines ready for his four-year-old child and his newborn baby. Anyway, it is fantastic to see that we have finally regained some small step towards sanity, and just in time, as I may be traveling out to Seattle in a couple of months. That's a weight off my mind. I don't want to be... I'm a nice guy. Really am a very nice human being out in public. Never want to cause any problems, but the thought of me being masked for 6 to 8 hours in my travels out to Seattle, I was kind of wondering what I might be capable of by the end of that trip. Quotes of the day today, Andrew Klavan, he tweeted out, the mask mandates were difficult, but at least they accomplished nothing and made everybody miserable. So we know the federal government is still good at what it does. Dr. Aaron Carity pointed out that there appears to be a, quote, conflict of interest, unquote, within the CDC, whereby, quote, this is Dr. Aaron Carity, rather than releasing the data that American taxpayers have paid for and obviously have the right to see, and independent researchers have the right to scrutinize, they're keeping that information from the public because they think it may be harmful to some of the recommendations that they've made. It is always worth noting that the CDC only does what it does through taxpayer dollars, well, and big pharma contributions. And for them to keep information close to the chest when it's information that we paid for as people is pretty disgusting stuff. But the CDC has a long record of disgusting behavior. Nietzsche said the surest way to corrupt a youth is to instruct him to hold in higher esteem those who think alike than those who think differently. And I loved this one. Ian Williams Goddard. He said, a society whose citizens refuse to see and investigate the facts, who refuse to believe that their government and their media will routinely lie to them and fabricate a reality contrary to verifiable facts, is a society that chooses and deserves the police state dictatorship it is going to get. And this is what we've seen for the past 2 years, the police state in the air, particularly when it comes to airlines, people refusing to investigate for themselves and understand that the government and the media lies to you constantly, and so you get exactly what you deserve. And for the past 2 years, we've been getting it good and hard. You know, I talked a lot yesterday about the income tax, and I wanted to say something because I do this every year. It's my fifth show, my fifth tax day show, where I have pointed out the unconstitutionality, the theft that is American income taxes, and I realize I'm kind of shouting into the wind. Constantly amazed that most Americans, particularly conservatives, don't seem to really put up much of a fight of being stripped of a third of your wealth your entire life. For a group of people who consider themselves rock-solid patriots, from my dead cold hands people, it's interesting to me that everybody rolls over and just offers up their income to the government. But one of the things is, you know, if it feels like it's hopeless, that this is just where we are. They collect taxes. They take money out of our checks. They've done it since I was born. They'll do it till I die. We're never going to stop these control freaks and out-of-control spenders in Washington, D.C. The corruption is insurmountable. Trump tried, but he just didn't get there. It just shows you how deep the swamp is, that Trump couldn't beat it. There's a lot of people who say these things, but, you know, if I'd done a radio show in 1860 saying that slavery was a bad thing and we needed to get rid of slavery, most people would have laughed at that as well. And I think this is always an important point to make. And that within 5 years of that, anybody in 1860, 1855 that was saying we need to abolish slavery, you understand slavery was an institution that had been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Our individual income tax has only been around for a little over 100 years. And it's only been really affecting the middle class. You've only had money ganked out of you every single one of your paychecks for about the past 70 years. Slavery had been around for thousands of years. And yet it was abolished within a few short years of 1860, of 1855. You would have been seen to be insane to even think for a second that the powerful, because understand the institution of slavery, contrary to public opinion, that every white person owned a black person. It was only about 3% of the white population that even had slaves. It was the wealthy, it was the powerful who controlled everything, who benefited from slavery. It wasn't most white people didn't benefit from slavery. It was the uber elites back in the day that had slaves and benefited from the system, yet the system did crumble. I just say that to say. I understand people can look at taxes and just shrug your shoulders and go, that's just the way it is. You can't fight the system. I'm just hoping I can elect somebody who takes 5% less. But that's not always the case. And I believe that, I guess I've got a bit of optimism in me. If you can make something so evident that it is theft and it is wrong, the government misspends your money, they have no entitled claim to any of your income or your wealth, that eventually people will catch on. So we'll see. We'll see if I just did a radio show that was something akin to ending slavery in 1860, or if it is true that most people have just decided to love their servitude and conservatives are content with just letting their chains set a little bit lighter on their shoulders by getting what goes as a tax cut from their leaders rather than leaving their income alone. I wanted to get into a little bit of financial stuff as I like to at the beginning of the show. I'm able to do a radio show documenting so many interesting things. These are historical times that we are living in. We've gone through COVID, and I don't think they're done with us on COVID, but hopefully I am wrong. We've been through the worst stripping of Americans' rights in my lifetime and possibly save Japanese Americans in World War II. Stripping of rights of Americans throughout our history. We've just lived through that. We're right now narrating, and I've got clips today about World War III that apparently is poised to kick off. And boy, have I got some good clips on the other side of what the major media is presenting to you of this loving democracy of Ukraine that we should all stand with. There is another side to that story that we don't hear, and just like with COVID, offering a second opinion here on this show and really across WIAB, I'm going to offer you a second opinion on what's going on in Ukraine right now through some clips, so stick around for that. But we're also living through what I believe is the setup for the bursting of the everything bubble. We could be on the cusp of something worse than the Great Depression. And I'm very concerned about how they bring us out of this. I'm bound to determine that Americans get an education before the collapse so that you understand what caused the collapse, so you do not give the people who caused the collapse more power to create a new system. And so I've got a couple of things on that, including I was listening to Peter Schiff's podcast late last night, and he started going through import and export prices. Now, this may not be anything on anybody's mind. I know I get a little wonky on the economic stuff, but it's really important, and the numbers are stunning. What are they telling us right now? People are up in arms citing the government statistics of 8.9% inflation, 8.5% inflation. You think that's horrific? Wait till you hear the economic numbers from the import and export prices. Inflation is so much worse than they're telling us about. We'll get to all that stuff when we come back. I talk a lot about wealth inequality on this show. And some people who tune in might think that they stumbled onto some liberal left-wing show, because the Republican Party and Conservatism, Inc., the establishment, has tried to tell you that if you talk about, you know, wealth inequality, this is a, you know, hate the rich type thing, and that all you need to do is work harder and you're going to accomplish, you know, the American dream. I'm not talking about the wealth inequality between somebody who makes $40,000 and someone who makes $250,000. The $250,000 is achievable by most anybody that really sets their mind to it in this country. When I'm talking about wealth inequality, I'm talking about that 0.01% that has had all of the spoils, particularly of the 21st century. I also give liberals and Democrats some credit for pointing this out for a period of time, even though they really don't understand it. They don't understand what causes it. They listen to the Nancy Pelosi's, to the Chuck Schumer's, to the Joe Biden's, to the Clinton's, the people who pander to people who are struggling, and tell you they're just going to take it from the wealthy and they're going to give it to you. And if you just vote hard enough for them, you're going to end up being, you know, on equal par with everybody. They know very well they'll never take this stuff. You know, I talked yesterday a lot about taxes. When Democrats tell you they're going to raise marginal rates, you think they're going to actually hurt their donor class? I mean, seriously, come on now. The hedge funds, the Wall Street titans, most of them are Democrats. You think they're really going to hurt them, or they're going to raise the marginal rate, which will hurt, you know, basically the top maybe 5 to 10% of people. But that 0.01%, they'll insert things in the tax code to give them loopholes so they never actually pay those amounts. I mean, it's ridiculous on its face to even think that the Democrats, who are sponsored by the Jeff Bezos of the world, the Jamie Dimon, who is the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, these are all recognized Democrats. They're not going to hurt these people because they need money from them. But wealth inequality is a real problem. It will tear a society apart. And what we've seen over the 21st century is policies by our government and the Federal Reserve that has just the amount of money that has floated to the top from the poor, the working class, and the middle class is astounding. The biggest wealth transfer in the history of our country, probably in the history of mankind. I don't know, inflation adjusted. Maybe the Romans had a worse system. I don't know. But Charles Hugh Smith has written parts on this that had, or has written a piece on this that had some interesting statistics in it. He says, how can we get a handle on the $33 trillion we've added in total debt since 2010? Now, the $33 trillion, this includes just money that the Fed has printed up. This is the Fed's balance sheet, is almost $9 trillion. Now, it's interesting. The Federal Reserve said they're combating inflation. Remember, they raised interest rates 0.25%? Yet their balance sheet, meaning the amount of money they've been printing up, is still increasing. They just added like another $29 billion of money printing, which is what causes inflation. So they're telling you out of one side of their mouth, we're fighting inflation with this 0.25% rate hike, while nobody's paying attention to the fact they're still printing money, the cause of inflation. Charles Hugh Smith writes, how can we get a handle on the $33 trillion we've added in total debt since 2010? We can start by noting that's a 60% increase in debt in about a decade, while the population of the United States rose by, anyone, 7%. We increased the debt by 60%, but the population only grew by 7%. He says, are we 60% better off than we were 12 years ago? How do we measure better off? GDP went up by 60% as well, but are we 60% more efficient or 60% more productive? Has the purchasing power of our wages gone up 60%? Can we buy 60% more with the day's earnings? I think it's fair to say no to all of these questions. We've added $33 trillion in debt to more or less just tread water. Does it illuminate the $33 trillion to say that's $100,000 of debt for every one of the 330 million Americans? Are we each $100,000 better off for borrowing $33 trillion? Well, a few folks have benefited. The top 400 wealthiest folks have seen their wealth skyrocket by trillions of dollars from roughly 8% of GDP in 2010, which was way up from just 2.5% in 1985, to about 18% of GDP, which is now $24 trillion. That works out to $4.3 trillion has gone to 400 people. Charles Hugh Smith goes on to say, so let's ask ourselves, who is the cui bono? Who benefits of the $33 trillion in added debt and the $9 trillion added to GDP? To whose benefit? I think it's fair to say the benefits were distributed among a power law distribution to which the top 0.01% skimmed the majority of the gains. The top 0.1% received the next largest chunk. The top 1% collected most of what was left. And that's what we've seen. Now, this is French Revolution type stuff, if people ever understood it. Luckily for these 400 people, luckily for our political class and their donor class, luckily for them, Americans do not understand any of this. You might understand this, though. Natural gas prices have now gone up to the highest since 2008. U.S. Nat gas spikes above $8 for the first time since 2008. Now, why has this happened? This is quite astounding to me. So we have record natural gas prices. This is important to people. I think there's a snowstorm going on right now in the Middle East, but all kinds of things are powered by natural gas. Many people's water heaters. A lot of people have gas water heaters around here. Why has this gone up? Because of the sanctions on the Russians. Not because of Russia, not because Putin invaded Ukraine, no, because the sanctions on the Russians have cut them off from the world supply. So American producers of natural gas are shipping so much natural gas to Europe now to replace what Russia used to sell them that they're getting shortages here in the United States and they're able to charge more for it. See, this has been the game all along. Trump played this game too. Trump put all these sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines from Russia, told Germany, don't buy your gas from Russia. We got gas over here. You can buy our natural gas. We'll give you natural gas, Germany. You don't need those Russians that are just a few hundred miles away from you. You need to come over here, 4,500 miles away. We'll send you our natural gas. Well, now our U.S. producers are sending that natural gas over there, which leaves less of it for us here in America, so they're charging more for it. Congratulations. The U.S.'s mission to resupply Europe with liquid natural gas is taking critical supplies away from domestic markets and boosting prices sky high, crushing Americans' households to, quote unquote, save Germans from shortages. This has been, every time you've heard someone say something about Nord Stream 2, Obama, Trump, and Biden, all three of them attacking Nord Stream 2 pipeline, this is what you get for it. Congratulations. This is Peter Schiff. He's talking about import-export prices. So what they tell us is inflation here in the United States is running, I think the latest number was 8.5 or 8.9%. Now, this figure is massaged. But there's other figures out there. I talked one day about the rents report. The rents report showed that rents were up 15%, which is much more consistent with real inflation, the way it was calculated back in the 1980s, which is not replacement. Now we have, if steak goes up too much, our federal government says, oh, well, the dummies out there, the po folks, can't afford any more steak, so they'll just have hamburger, so we'll reduce the amount of what their groceries cost so that it, you know, and this keeps inflation figures low. It's called the substitution effect. They also do hedonics where they say, oh, sure, the price of this product has gone up, but there's so many new bells and whistles to the product that it's really worth more, so the price really isn't that high. They do all these kinds of weird adjustments to inflation to give you these bogus numbers of used to be 1.5%, now it's 8% when we know real inflation is at 15%. Import-export prices is another one of these that is not a massaged, it's not a manipulated statistic because it's just, hey, we import, I don't care what it is, a T-shirt from China. And 2 years ago, it was this price. This year, it's this price. This is what the inflation is here. So these numbers are more honest. Listen to some of these prices. If you want to get a grasp on what inflation is really running here, these are some numbers that'll tell you what's going on.
What does tell the real story are the import-export prices that came out the following day. Listen to these numbers. Import prices in the month of March increased by 2.6%. That's 1 month. The Fed was talking about how they want inflation to be 2%. They want prices to go up by 2% per year. Well, the price of our imports went up by 2.6% in a single month.
Now, what's important about that, I know I'm a public school graduate. Here's the math on that. A 2.6% increase in 1 month, if you annualize that out to get year-over-year inflation, and these numbers will go up and down to some degree, but why it's important to understand, that 2.6%, Mike, that doesn't sound like a whole lot. Well, within 1 month, should that trend continue, that's an inflation rate on imported goods into the United States, which is a hell of a lot of what we buy, right? We all know we don't manufacture near what we used to. We buy a lot of imported goods. 2.6 in a month is an annualized rate, inflation rate of 31.2% on imported goods.
But as bad as imports are, exports are even worse. Export prices shot up by 4.5% in 1 month, double the expected gain of 2.2%.
Now, again, that's a one. He's going to explain to you why export prices matter. But an annualized rate, that's a 54% annualized inflation rate on exported goods, the stuff we manufacture here. Do you think that they're selling it to us here in the United States real cheap, but just gouging the rest of the world? No.
Now, again, a lot of people think, who cares about export prices? We're not paying those prices. That's what our trading partners are paying. The important thing is the companies that are producing stuff to export, they're also producing stuff that we don't export. This is a reflection of the increase in the domestic cost of production. And so if the stuff that we're selling our trading partners, if we had to raise prices by 4.5%, it stands to reason that we also had to raise prices for American customers buying the same products. Maybe not quite as much, but pretty close. And look at the year-over-year numbers. Import prices year-over-year up 12.5%. Export prices up 18.8%. That's an incredible increase in those prices. And when you think about it, when consumers are out there shopping and buying stuff, they're either buying stuff that was imported or stuff we made ourselves. Well, the stuff that we imported is up by 12.5% year over year. The stuff we're making ourselves is up by 18.8% year over year. How is it that consumer prices are only up by 8.5%? Well, that's because the CPI is manipulated. It gets adjusted. There's substitution, there's hedonics, but none of those adjustments take place when you're looking at import-export prices. It's just, hey, this is the stuff that we imported. Here's how much the price went up. This is the stuff we actually exported, and here's how much the prices went up. So these numbers are real. The government official CPI numbers are make-believe.
Yep. There you go. So there is some of your true inflation report there. Pay no attention to the official figures that they put out in what Jen Psaki calls the Putin price hikes. It's unbelievable. It's hard to watch. And it's why I do this topic on this show over and over again. You know, different people tune in. I'm just hoping some people will catch a clue from now on. The Democrats try to convince you it's Putin. The Republicans try to convince you it's Biden. Both of them are lying straight to your face and hoping that they can get away with it because they want this system to keep on churning and they want you to blame the wrong person. Unbelievable. This is just a glimpse. There is no sign. There is nothing on the horizon that says that this inflation is going away anytime soon. None. Now, we could find a financial crisis that makes people pull back. People lose jobs. We could have demand destruction because the economy starts to really falter. It could temper some of these price increases. But as I told you, the Federal Reserve is still printing money. Just in the past couple of weeks, they've added $27 or $29 billion to their balance sheet, meaning they printed up almost $30 billion just recently. after promising us that they were trying to fight inflation. What you've seen so far, it ain't the end, and this has the potential to just continue to accelerate. We'll see. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. Thanks for joining me. I did hear from Cade Yates over to Americans for Prosperity. Excuse me. He did give me the address. They are having their open house tonight from 6 to 7:30. Come by and just meet some of the people there. You will meet like-minded people if you're interested in freedom and liberty stuff. It's time people got involved. We've got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do in Mississippi when it comes to the Mississippi legislature. I don't know if you've noticed, they're not. They may all be painted red. We may have a supermajority state. Not real concerned with really setting the people free of things like individual income taxes. We had COVID restrictions here that were just off the charts, ridiculous. Not as long as some of the blue states, but we had them nonetheless. So we've got work to do here. It's time for people to mobilize. Americans for Prosperity is a great rallying point for that. As I said, you'll meet some like-minded people, and the organization is great. Their office is at 795 Woodlands Parkway, Suite 100. That's in Ridgeland, 795 Woodlands Parkway. You can check them out, Americans for Prosperity, on Facebook. Get the details. But their open house is tonight from 6 to 7:30. I've got some stuff on Ukraine. Scott Ritter, if you remember him, I believe he was a weapons inspector at one point. I think he kind of came to prominence during the WMD's controversy of Iraq One. He appeared on a podcast. I'm going to save it for the next hour because I want to really flesh it out. It's one of these things where I'm going to show you what the warmongers and the propagandists are trying to tell you, how they are trying to lead us to World War III. I saw a headline. I didn't listen to the clip. Apparently there's one of the Russian broadcasters has come out and said, we are in World War III now. We're there. Not it's coming. We're flirting with it. It could possibly happen. It's going on now. They have got Finland and Sweden now saying they're going to be fast-tracked into NATO. Go take a look at a map. I know we're not good at geography here in the United States. You know, the United States, I love this country. I really do. But even I'm struck by our arrogance sometimes. Sometimes it's comical. You remember when they tried to get us on the metric system? I think this was during the 1970s. We toyed with it for, I don't know, how long? Maybe 12 or 18 months. It was just too hard. We just went, nah, we're okay. The rest of the world, I believe, the entire world is on the metric system. The United States just went, ah, well, we like our pounds and our gallons. We're just going to stick with this. And so we never got on the metric train. Finland is a border country with Russia, and the entire problem that Russia has had all this time, what kicked off all of this controversy, all of this aggression by Russia in the first place, is them now for 30 years saying, don't move NATO closer to our country. You promised you wouldn't move NATO closer to our country. Stop moving NATO closer to our country. Stop moving weapons closer to our country. If you go into Ukraine, we cannot allow you to have it in Ukraine. We will not take any more NATO weapons closer to our country. This is what they've been saying for decades now, particularly over the last 10 years since we overthrew the government of Ukraine and took that place over. And now we're talking about where we're going to put Finland in there, too. Go take a look at a map. Finland's got a nice long border with Russia, and they are trying to fast track this. They are pushing us towards World War III. Your Congress critter. Be it Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, or Michael Guest here in central Mississippi, they are pushing us to World War III. Same for Benny Thompson, not sure about the other two guys. They are pushing us to World War III as we speak. As I said, these are historic times. Scott Ritter was on a podcast, and he's giving kind of a second opinion. He makes some incredible points about what's going on in Ukraine and points that are not being made in the mainstream news. When I come back, one other quick little report I wanted to get in there. I thought it was an interesting study about the afterlife. I'm going to kind of pigeonhole this into the show, and then we'll come back next hour and talk about this Ukraine stuff. You've got to hear this stuff that Scott Ritter talks about. It may cause some people to remove their blue and yellow flag from their Twitter account. I'll be right back. I thought this was just an interesting survey that was done about people considering the afterlife. A new survey of over 1,000 people in the United Kingdom, commissioned by Spirit Shack, finds 50% of respondents believe in an afterlife. Of this group, 60% believe everyone experiences the same thing when they die, regardless of their individual beliefs. However, 2 in 3 believe scientists will never be able to tell us what really happens when someone passes. This was kind of interesting to me. Regardless of whether people think they're going to heaven, and 55% of them people think they're going to heaven, or worry that their life choices could end up sending them to hell. It was 58% of people thought that making the wrong choices during your life could send you to hell. The poll finds 68% of all respondents have no fear of what comes next. You wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that judging by the duck people walking around their N95 mask, were you? I mean, it's always kind of interesting to me. Look, I'm not somebody who fears death. I'm not rushing towards it. I'm not encouraging it. I'm fascinated to find out what's next. I entertain all kinds of theories. I'm somebody who is very, very open to the idea. I have no idea. No earthly idea. But I do think that an energy lives on within us, and however it goes, fascinated to find out how that manifests itself. But I thought this was kind of interesting because the part particularly, worry their life choices could end up sending them to hell, 58%. Now, I would imagine a lot of people worry about things like, I don't know, drinking, drugs, sex, stealing, cheating, kind of some of these moral crimes that many of us commit all of the time. I'm not saying that all of those things are crimes, but people, I think, wrestle with these kinds of things. If you have any religious bent, you're trying to think, am I living a life that would allow me to do well at the pearly gates? I just wanted to throw a few things in here that I think would not play well at the pearly gates. Some of them may not surprise you. I would say that if you vote for and support wars and the war criminals who lead the wars, how do you think that conversation is going to go at the pearly gates? I really believe that my anti-war stance, my renewed desire to see humanity do better, rather than puffing out my chest and thinking it's patriotic for our country to go topple governments and kill innocent people, I think this is going to play well at the pearly gates. It's my anti-war stance is earnest. It is a deeply held belief that we are all at the whims of a psychopathic ruling class right now and have been throughout all of history. It's just that now it's our government, the psychopaths in our government that have convinced normal, moral, Christian conservatives to cheer for the instruments of death around the world. I got to tell you, I don't think that plays well at the pearly gates, and it's something maybe you should wrestle with internally. This is not a popular belief, because the propaganda has been that we're always on the right side of things, and we're just spreading democracy. We drop love bombs when we bomb people, because we're always the cowboy with the white hat. This is patently not true, and I'll explain some of that next hour. I would say the same thing for people who cheer for locking people into cages for any transgression of a, air quotes here in the studio, law. That if some politicians get together and deem something to be untoward in their eyes to accomplish whatever their goals are, that we would cheer for people to be put into a cage because they did not obey some law that a bunch of bureaucrats or politicians put together. I would also say, cheering a government to steal money from certain people and give it away to other people, that's theft. You are encouraging stealing. And this is something else, again, I don't think plays well at the pearly gates. We have all kinds of moral failings in our own personal lives. But when it comes to politics, I see people participate in some of the grossest, most egregious, morally depraved positions, to twist themselves in a knot to support a party or a politician itself. And these things, I think, cannot be good for us in the afterlife. As I say, I do a lot of time on this show talking with my anti-war stance, anti-drug war stance, anti-terror war stance. All of these things that really subject a lot of humans to incredible misery. I take a lot of stances against these things. I'm trying to atone because I used to believe the other side of these things. I was for an interventionist policy where we just controlled the world, and I'm so ashamed of it and so worried about my time as I try to enter the afterlife that I am now speaking actively against it and hoping I'm building my resume for a better afterlife. Anyway, everybody's concerned with these things. I just think these are some issues. Maybe you should look a little deeper into yourself and see, you know, if you're concerned about your eternal life, these might be some things to focus on. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Clay Edwards said that he ran into somebody who's listened to the show and said that they learn something every day they listen to the show. This is the greatest compliment that I could ever hear. I do a lot of research into stuff to try to find those things that are not talked about largely in conservative media. This is important to me. I think, you know, both sides of the aisle are just missing a ton of stuff that is really kind of the behind the scenes stuff. So much is done about the political theater. Now, you might learn something new if you go to Gateway Pundit or Breitbart. You may see a story about something that you didn't know about, but you know what you're going to get when you go to Breitbart, right? Everything is twisted, and there's so much left out of that because there's all kinds of problems with the Republican Party and Republican candidates and things, and they just won't touch those on conservative sites. I touch all those things because I don't care about parties. I don't care about politicians. I hold most of them in utter contempt, and so I'm free to do whatever I want to. So big part of this show is trying to bring things to people that they don't hear anywhere else. And this is one of those times we're going to kind of set this up in talking about the Ukraine issue, because I want to get to these clips from Scott Ritter, who is, I think, has got some very compelling reporting from what's going on in Ukraine. I've kind of noticed, granted, I do not watch mainstream media anymore. I can't take it. I just can't take it. Occasionally, about every 2 to 3 weeks, I might be able to make it through 5 to 10 minutes of mainstream media of any stripe before I just am just disgusted at what I'm seeing, knowing so much of what they are saying is dishonest and a lot of it just outright lies and propaganda. But I have not seen a ton of, you know, when the Iraq war was going on, you had reporters embedded everywhere, right? They're on the front lines. They're doing this. They're doing that. Most of the reports I've seen now are, you know, I'm standing here in Kiev. They call it the other word that I don't use. We're standing here in Kiev, and we hear that 400 miles away, this is what the Russians did. And we get a few still images of bodies in the streets. Well, not a whole lot of kind of live war reporting that we've been used to, right? Where you're seeing Russian tanks rolling over innocent people, this kind of thing. So it's all open to whatever the mainstream narrative on this is. So I'm going to set up kind of what the mainstream narrative is, and then we're going to let Scott Ritter come in and tell you, and this is a guy who certainly has geopolitical and foreign conflict experience. He was one of the weapons inspectors back in the days of Iraq. And to let you make up your own mind, this is what is trending on mainstream news. Joe Biden cannot stop provoking and saying outrageous things, leading us further and further toward World War III.
The White House is offering further comment on President Biden's claims of genocide being committed by Russian forces in Ukraine. As NPR's Windsor Johnston reports, Biden had stopped short of using that term until now.
President Biden on Tuesday said Russia's war in Ukraine amounts to genocide, accusing President Vladimir Putin of trying to wipe out the idea of even being a Ukrainian. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Biden's remarks come as it becomes more clear of what's happening in Ukraine.
He was speaking to what he feels we see on the ground. But regardless of what you call it, what our objective now is, as evidenced by the enormous package of military assistance we put out today.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. Thank you, taxpayers.
Is continue to help and assist the Ukrainians in this war and one where we see atrocities happening every single day.
President Biden announced an additional $800 million in military assistance to Ukraine as Russia shifts its military operation to the eastern part of the country.
Okay, so Joe Biden is calling out a genocide at the hands of Vladimir Putin. This was just another story that just talks a little bit about this new kind of warfare that we're involved in here. And I think this is why you don't see a whole lot of just live footage of the conflict. Instead, it's all just narratives driven by the mainstream media who just tells you what's happening. They don't show you, they just tell you.
The war in Ukraine is providing the U.S. military valuable insight on how to handle future conflicts with major adversaries like Russia or China. Army Secretary Christine Wormuth says one major lesson already learned is the use of the Internet. The Army is currently doing scenario exercises at Fort Irwin in California. Troops are learning how to respond to specific Russian tactics used in the invasion of Ukraine, including electronic warfare, insurgency, and propaganda.
Yeah, propaganda. I love the way people are talking about Russian propaganda. You know, propaganda, I grew up on it in terms of communist propaganda, Pravda in the old Soviet Union, where the Russian people were constantly lied to about the United States and Western powers and about how great communism is. If you've ever seen any of the documentaries on North Korea, you want to talk about propaganda. It's really off the charts comical propaganda in North Korea, where it's just basically headlines go out that say, Kim Jong-un has cured cancer and he's the starting forward for the Boston Celtics next season. I mean, it's just bizarre stuff of a brainwashed nation. Fascinating documentaries on North Korea. But this always presupposes, this always takes this tilt where, well, we don't have propaganda here. I mean, this is something that the Russians and the Soviets and the North Koreans do. We're studying propaganda. But anybody with any historical context knows we've been running things like Voice of America over in Europe during the Cold War. And even since then, we are a propaganda machine. A lot of people are waking up to that now, finally, and seeing that our mainstream media, just whether it's COVID or whether it's Ukraine, whatever it is, they just say things. They just carry water. And now it's gone so far to show you that if you just disagree with the mainstream narrative, you're taken off of Twitter, you're taken off of YouTube, you're deplatformed, possibly fired, you're silenced, just for offering up a different opinion, except for here on WYAB. But anyway, so it always kind of cracks me up. But we're studying this Russian propaganda. No, believe me, the Russians have been studying American propaganda for a while. It continues to get worse. Now we've got Chris Coons. He's a Democrat from Delaware. And we're getting some of the first calls for American troops in Ukraine. I'm setting up these Scott Ritter clips. So this is Chris Coons. He went on one of the Sunday, I guess this is Face the Nation on the CBS network. And he's ready for boots on the ground.
In some public remarks this week, you said the country needs to talk about when it might be willing to send troops to Ukraine. You said if the answer is never, then we are inviting another level of escalation and brutality by Putin.
Now, remember, my suggestion is, should I become king of the United States, anywhere there is active hostilities where we are putting our troops in harm's way, Congress has to convene on the front lines there. That's where they meet. No more Capitol Hill Rotunda, no more Senate chambers in Washington, D.C., no more air-conditioned offices and penthouse apartments. Wherever they commit our troops, that's where Congress has to convene. How long do you think wars would last? How many wars do you think they would start? I think this is a great move towards peace, and this is a Mike Madison original. But this is Chris Coons essentially saying we need to start talking about it, sending troops into Ukraine.
Are you arguing that President Biden was wrong when he said he would not send troops to Ukraine? Are you asking him to set a red line?
Margaret, I think those of us in Congress who have a critical role in setting foreign policy and in advising the president in terms of his decisions as commander in chief need to look clearly at the level of brutality. This is a moment of enormous challenge for all of us. And I deeply respect President Biden's leadership in pulling together the West, in imposing crushing sanctions on Russia, and in bringing to this fight countries that had stayed on the sidelines before. I think
basically he's crediting Joe Biden with really setting the stage for World War III. Congratulations to the dementia patient who has allowed the people behind him, the people pulling his strings, to set us up perfectly for World War III. We're getting a whole bunch of countries involved.
President Biden's leadership has been steady and constructive, but this is a critical moment. If Vladimir Putin, who has shown us how brutal he can be, is allowed to just continue to massacre civilians, to commit war crimes throughout Ukraine without NATO, without the West coming more forcefully to his aid, I deeply worry that what's going to happen next is that we will see Ukraine turn into Syria. Mm-hmm. The American people cannot turn away.
That's pretty amazing. We're the ones who leveled Syria. That's, you know, I don't think I had picked up on that the first time I watched this clip. I might have been so disgusted to listen to this psychopath talk that I might have cut it off before then. I'm not sure. That's a hell of a thing to say. This could turn into Syria. You remember what we did to Syria, right? Where we took town after town and we just rubbleized them, turned them into ashes. You remember how we got just millions of Syrians to flee for their lives into Europe? You remember how we did that by funding radical jihadists through the CIA? Yeah, we're scared Putin might do what we did in Syria.
From this tragedy in Ukraine, I think the history of the 21st century turns on how fiercely mm-hmm. we defend freedom in Ukraine, and that Putin will only stop when we stop him.
All right, so there you go. One of the psychopaths who says he's got an important voice in matters of foreign security or whatever, he's foreign affairs. It's amazing the people that are running this country. They truly are evil, evil, evil people. Joe Biden, genocide, this guy talking about the atrocities that we're seeing that Russia is laying on the Ukrainian people. When we come back, we'll get a second opinion. We'll listen to Scott Ritter explain with some pretty well-documented stuff exactly what is going on in Ukraine. I agree with Chris Coons here. There are atrocities being committed in Ukraine. The problem is, who's committing them?
I went home with a waitress the way I always do.
So there is only one acceptable view in the United States, according to social media, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, PBS, MSNBC, and Fox News, except for Tucker Carlson, all the way from Rachel Maddow to Sean Hannity. I believe in the green room, every guest is sworn in that their only view that they will express publicly on their airways is that Putin is Hitler and he's committing atrocities and everything's all his fault. So this is an interview that Scott Ritter did on a podcast. You're not going to see him on The View. You're not going to see him on Fox News. You're not going to see him anywhere in the mainstream media. He's relegated to essentially to podcasts out there because he does not carry this. Vladimir Putin is the Antichrist narrative that's being drawn up. Now, I believe Putin is a thug. He's massively wealthy, and I don't know what he gets paid as president of the Russian Federation, but unless it's in the hundreds of millions a year, he's probably done some pretty dishonest things to acquire some wealth. I wouldn't want to be a dissident in Putin's Russia. He's a strong man. I do not support his invasion of Ukraine, but I understand it. It was not a mystery. It is not irrational on Russia's part. It's unfortunate that the West has provoked Russia so badly and surrounded their country with NATO weapons. All that being said, these are the kinds of things you won't hear anywhere else. But I want you to listen. This is, like I say, it's a second opinion. You can draw your own conclusions on what's going on. You can trust your mainstream media, your Rachel Maddows and your Sean Hannitys. Or you can question everything, which is what I think you should do. Here's what Scott Ritter is saying about Ukraine. Joe Biden says there's a genocide going on. Chris Coons, the Democrat from Delaware, says we need boots on the ground because there are atrocities going on in Ukraine right now. They may both be right, but the question is, who's perpetrating these atrocities?
The reason why I bring this up is we're talking about mindset. We have one side that says we're trying to preserve human life, and civilian infrastructure. We have the other side that says if you collaborate with the Russians, you will be killed. I mean, it's written down. They've made videos. They talk about it. So now the Russians from Bucha withdraw, part of this withdrawal. While they were there for several weeks, the Russian military says we had good relations with the local people. It was peaceful.
Now, remember, this is Bucha. This was the first, air quotes here in the studio, atrocity that was laid at Russia's feet. And we've already talked about some of the videos that have come out where there's the guy that's laying and there's a big room full of body bags. And right behind the news person's shoulder, you can see one of the body bags moving. One of the body bags kind of slips and this guy is desperately trying to pull the body bag back over his body. We've seen videos of dead people in the streets, and as the trucks pass, you can catch a glimpse in the rearview mirror of one of the corpses standing up. And so we've been just barraged by these images. Bucha was the first one where they showed, I think it was 250 civilians dead in the streets. So he's talking about Bucha right now.
We traded our dry rations for their dairy products. So they had a system of barter set up.
He's talking about the Russians were trading food with the residents of Bucha while they were there.
So the citizens of Bucha would give them eggs, milk, cheese, and the Russians would give them the dry rations, the flour, the salt, the sugar, the meat, etc. And this was going on. Then the Russians left. Anybody who engaged in that kind of interaction with the Russians was now viewed as a collaborator. We know this because the Ukrainian National Police have published an announcement that they are going into Bucha on April 1st to carry out a cleansing operation to liquidate the collaborators. All right, this is the exact opposite of the Russian approach, which is we treat everybody with respect and we try not to harm civilians. The Ukrainians are saying if you cooperate with the Russians, you will die. They have a videotape of a senior political figure announcing on social media to the citizens of Bucha, stay in your homes. The national police are carrying out a cleansing operation. Do not panic. Stay in your homes. She repeats it over and over and over again. Why? Because the police are in the streets gunning people down.
So there you go. Ukrainian police coming out and saying if you traded goods with Russians, if you were nice to the Russians while they had basically taken over your town, we're going to come kill you. You're now a collaborator. You're now a traitor to Ukraine. No trial, no nothing. We're just going to kill you. There's been videos of them shooting people in the back of the head in Ukraine. This is the Ukrainian government, by the way.
Kicking in doors of people who are collaborating and killing them. And we know this is more than just a document and a videotape, because we have videotape of them actually doing it. We have videotape of the Ukrainian police, especially an Azov group, proudly claiming that you're going on a safari.
The Azov group is the Nazi brigade that the Ukrainian army has. I think they've got two or three of these Nazi brigades openly displaying the swastika, the SS emblem. They are historical Nazis. I've used the term neo-Nazi. I think this is just a continuation of the Nazis of Nazi Germany, a long heritage of Nazis that are in this Ukrainian government. This is not a hidden fact. Occasionally you'll see an article in something like The Atlantic that says, there are questions about the far-right elements in the Ukrainian military, but they just kind of dismiss it like it's just a couple of one-offs. No, this is the entrenchment of literal Nazis in the Ukrainian government and military forces.
The videotape, because we have videotape of them actually doing it. We have videotape of the Ukrainian police, especially an Azov group, proudly claiming that you're going on a safari. That's an important word, because when we talk about propaganda, how you take the language of one side, flip it and use it against, you know, take your language, flip it and use it against the other guys. It's Ukrainians who have a special unit. The name of the Ukrainian special police unit that went into Bucha was the Safari Unit. And they were carrying out a safari to cleanse the pro-Russian collaborators. And cleansing means kill, not capture, kill. And they're doing it. And then they go around and they film the dead bodies and they say the Russians did it. Now, there's a couple of things about the dead bodies. One, most of them are wearing white armbands, which means that they were telling the Russians, we're on your side. Don't shoot us. All right. Two, near each body is a green dry ration box, which they were carrying when they got killed. And it's on the ground next to them. Three, when they didn't have the armband, it's because the armband had been taken off and used to bind their hands. These people were murdered, not by the Russians, but by the Ukrainians. And yet that's not the spin that we're getting right now. The spin we're getting is just the opposite. All the forensic data that's available right now strongly suggests that the Ukrainians are responsible for the death of these people in Bucha. There's no doubt about it.
And the thing that lends so much credibility to this is some of the timing. I think he might talk about it in this next clip, but also the fact that one of the things that kicked off this whole problem, this whole invasion by Russia, is that the Ukrainian government was trying to cleanse, they were trying to murder ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine for the past 8 years. They had killed 14,000 ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. They had built a dam to cut off the Crimean people, the ethnic Russians in Crimea. They built a dam and cut off 85% of the fresh water to the Crimean region to try to starve the people there. Actually, I think the 85%, agricultural output after this dam was built, agricultural output for the people in Crimea went down by 85%. The Ukrainian government policy was to starve out or murder the people of Crimea and of the Donbass region in eastern Ukraine. The people that associated with Russia, they were ethnic Russians. They just happened to be in the new borders of Ukraine. So Ukraine government has a long history now. A multi-year history of trying to ethnically cleanse ethnic Russians out of their country. A real genocide. So Joe Biden is kind of right when he said there's a genocide going on. There's a genocide that's been going on over there for at least 8 to 10 years. The problem is it wasn't the Russians that were doing it. It was the Ukrainian government itself. Here's Scott Ritter's last clip.
The other interesting thing is they're trying to say these bodies died. I don't want to get too graphic here, but I've been around dead bodies, all right? You shoot a body on March 19th, and you leave it lying in the street in 50 and 60-degree weather until April 2nd, the body ain't looking like they're looking on TV. Bodies tend to blow it up. The clothing tends to tear because the body swells, and then the body bursts, and it's very disgusting. It's gross. It's fetid. It's putrid. It's not what you saw on TV. What you saw on TV were freshly killed human beings. And we have another piece of evidence that more people need to pay attention to. A Mexican journalist gained access to Bucha on the same day that the Ukrainians were declaring this. And he filmed the bodies, fresh blood. He sat there and said, these people are freshly killed. This is fresh blood. Body ain't laying there since March 19th and has fresh blood. These people were murdered on April 1st by the Ukrainian National Police. And yet we have the President of the United States coming out and saying that this is a war crime perpetrated by the Russians and Vladimir Putin needs to be brought to justice in The Hague. This is a propaganda war unlike anything we've seen in modern times, because it's not just about manufacturing a case for war. This is about an outright lie about murder, which makes us complicit in the crime, us being Americans, because that's our president who's facilitating the crime.
And as I've said many times before, I don't know exactly what's going on in Vladimir Putin's mind. I don't believe everything that comes out of Russia. But we know our government lies every time it opens its mouth. We know our media lies. We know one side of this conflict is full of people who will just lie, and they don't care about lives. How many innocent people have been killed on the other end of an American gun for the past 20 years? We know that our government lies. We know Western media lies. And to think that if this Mexican journalist, I think that's very interesting, a Mexican journalist goes in there and sees fresh blood on people in the streets when the Russians have been gone for days. This is things that are not covered in the mainstream media. As I say, it's up to everybody to draw their own conclusions. And I don't know, I cannot verify everything that Scott Ritter is saying there, but the Ukrainian government has known. They have outlawed other parties in that. I mean, Zelensky is a thug with hidden offshore money. They have got confessed Nazis in their armed forces and in their government. These things are not even disputed. So when you're talking about a Russian invasion versus a bunch of Nazis, I don't know how many people remember history. The Nazis' record on human rights, not so good. This is pretty amazing to see what's going on right now. And this may be why American reporters are not embedded with the Ukrainian units doing this stuff, because they would be witnesses to horrific Ukrainian atrocities. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I want to finish up with this war coverage with this one quick story here. It's the cui bono. Who benefits from what's going on in Ukraine and around the rest of the world? They're so blatant about it. This is the thing that's very aggravating to those of us who pay attention to this kind of stuff, because it's just, you know, CNN can come out and call a face mask just a facial decoration with no effectiveness whatsoever, and people still wear masks. That's aggravating to people like me. Every person I see in a mask, I want to stop them and have a conversation. I'm not mad at you. I'm just wondering what you're thinking. It's like a psychological experiment or a survey almost. But this stuff is all out in the open for people, anybody who wants to see it. I want to read you some quotes from Greg Hayes. Do you know who Greg Hayes is? Greg Hayes is a recipient of a ton of the tax dollars that you sent to Washington, D.C. yesterday as the CEO of Raytheon Technologies. He has bragged about the prospect of conflict in Eastern Europe and other global hotspots. Quote, "We are seeing, I would say, opportunities for international sales. The tensions in Eastern Europe, the tensions in South China Sea, all of those things are putting pressure on some of the defense spending over there, so I fully expect we're going to see some benefit from it." In late March, in an interview with the Harvard Business Review after the war in Ukraine had begun, Hayes defended the way his company would profit from the conflict. Quote, "So I make no apology for that. I think, again, recognizing we are there to defend democracy." I didn't know the guy's a stand-up comic. And the fact is, eventually, we will see some benefit in the business over time. Everything. Now, I want you to pay attention to this. And I give credit to the people. There's a podcast called The No Agenda Show. And they are the first ones I heard float this idea of exactly what's taking place with all of the military hardware being sent to Ukraine. Listen to this. This is the CEO of Raytheon. "Everything that's being shipped into Ukraine today, of course, is coming out of stockpiles, either at the DOD, the Department of Defense, or from our NATO allies, and that's all great news. Eventually, we'll have to replenish it, and we will see a benefit to the business over the next coming years." They are clearing out all the old, used, outdated weapons that Raytheon sold to the federal government or to NATO allies at full cost. And we know how, you know, we're now 40 years into the stories about the $500 hammer and everything that is procured through the Department of Defense, which cannot pass an audit and is missing somewhere between $9 and $21 trillion they cannot account for. So there's no accounting for this money. Nobody at the Pentagon has ever earned a nickel of their own through hard labor. They essentially just become bureaucrats in the Pentagon and just spend wildly up to now $1 trillion a year that we know of. And so they bought all of this stuff from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin at full inflated prices before, and we never needed it, so it's just been sitting around. So they said, well, you know, we can't justify going out and buying a bunch more missiles because we got all these stockpiles of these old missiles here we never got to use. I know what. Let's send them all to Ukraine, and when our cupboard is bare, then we will have the Roger Wickers, the Marco Rubios, the Lindsey Grahams, the Chuck Schumers. They're all in on it. It's both parties. We'll have them say, oh, my gosh, we need to rebuild our stockpiles. And they're going to have to buy the brand new Raytheon weapons at the new inflated prices. And I don't know. I'm just going to assume that inflation has probably affected defense contractors as well. And so we will be buying new, shiny, much more expensive equipment from Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, United Technologies to refill the coffers of all the weapons that were sent to Ukraine. They're basically just clearing out inventory to make way for the new stuff. The fact that millions of people have had to flee for their lives doesn't matter to Raytheon or Lockheed Martin. The fact that people are dying right now in this conflict doesn't matter to them. The fact that Russians are suffering under these crippling sanctions that do not affect the leadership of Russia. Vladimir Putin's not going to miss a meal, but the Russian people are suffering. That's all just the cost of doing business for the defense contractors that are bragging about how great for business this all is. This is the scam. This is what it is. And this is why even Joe Biden has been told by his handlers, put into the teleprompter, that he's even increasing military budgets the same way his predecessor, Donald J. Trump, loved to shovel money towards these defense contractors as well. You remember his air quotes here in the studio, rebuilding the military? Looks like we're going to have to rebuild it again. The stockpiles are going to run low because we're sending weapons of death all around the world. And Lockheed Martin couldn't be happier. Be right back. All right, final segment for the day. Last chance for me to remind you, tonight, 6 o'clock to 7:30, Americans for Prosperity is holding an open house. You'll get to meet the new state director. They're going to talk a little bit about what they're going to focus on for the rest of the year. Now the legislature is out. Americans for Prosperity needs citizens to get involved. It's a Tuesday night. Nothing else going on. Go over there. You can grab a bite to eat with them and meet some of the people. You'll meet like-minded people there as well. I have yet to convince the people at Americans for Prosperity. Two words for good turnout: open bar. I have not gotten there yet, but it is a great time. You'll meet a lot of nice people there, and people who are freedom and liberty minded as well. So that's Americans for Prosperity, 6 o'clock to 7:30 tonight. The address of this function is 795 Woodlands Parkway. They're in Suite 100. This is in Ridgeland in the Woodlands office complex there. So come and check that out. If you're there, make sure you look me up. I should be there most of the time myself. I think this is a big story. Now, I do a Tech Tuesday segment when I have time for it. I've got one technology story. We'll see if I've got time. But this story came out, and boy, let me admit something to you right now. I am on board with climate change. I believe in climate change. I think the climate is always changing. Now, I'm not on board with the Green New Deal or this arrogant idea that human beings are the ones responsible for what is happening to our planet at all times. I'm not a hysterical about much of anything. Well, I don't know. Maybe you could say when it comes to, you know, debt and our financial situation, maybe I'm a tad hysterical, but we'll see. Time will tell. But I do believe in climate change. I mean, that was really the genius. When global freezing didn't work out for them in the 70s, they switched because, things are going the opposite direction. They went, okay, it's global warming, and they called it global warming. And then when it started to cool a little bit, they said, it's just climate change. We just can't tolerate any change. And these busybody scientists have gotten it down to like 0.2 of 1 degree Celsius is catastrophe. I played a clip on Friday where they said now we're 3 years away from a tipping point. Anyway, this is, I think, a great article to start a conversation with the climate hysteric in your life. And this I saw today. It's on the U.S. Sun. Headline is Wild World. Scientists spot, quote, strange and unexpected, unquote, events on Neptune as planet's temperature fluctuates wildly. Huh. Temperatures on Neptune appear to be rapidly changing, sparking confusion among scientists. Neptune is considered a planet of ice as it is the furthest away from our sun. But now, new research published in the Planetary Science Journal shows that its normal temperature of around negative 220 degrees Celsius has actually fluctuated wildly over the last two decades. Using ground-based infrared telescopes, scientists tracked Neptune's atmospheric temperatures over a 17-year period. The findings revealed an unexpected drop in the planet's global temperature by 8 degrees Celsius between 2003 and 2018. What's more, this cooling was then followed by a dramatic warming of its south pole between 2018 and 2020 by 11 degrees Celsius. Huh. Huh. Now, unless in 2018 Elon Musk was able to use his little SpaceX operation there to funnel up a bunch of SUVs and coal plants up to Neptune, it appears that the universe plays games with the climate of any planet. You know, when you stop and think about what the Earth is, and very few of us do very often, myself included, you know, we're kind of taught that we've got this sun in the middle and the planets just kind of spin around it, right? Almost like we're just sitting still, biding our time, you know, celebrating with a piece of cake every 365 days when we get around to our starting point. But actually what it is when you look at what our solar system is here, it's a sun that is going, you can imagine it going from right to left, and the planets are going around them in kind of a corkscrew manner. We're going through all kinds of different radiation and different temperatures and dark matter. Who knows what's going on around us? We're hurtling through space as in one of these tales of the Milky Way, if what they've told us is true. And to be honest with you, I'm open to just about anything now to find out that all of planetary science has been a big fat lie. I have no idea. They could be dead on right. They could be completely wrong. I really don't know. But the bottom line is the universe is a huge place full of all kinds of different energies and waves and cosmic beams and radiations and everything else. Neptune, a planet of ice, fluctuating wildly in temperature. Get your green weenies here. And I'm a big conservationist. I love the planet. I can't stand trash and pollution and these kinds of things. I'm a health nut. So I don't like these things either. But this arrogance of the AOCs, of the Democratic Party that tells you that climate change is an existential threat to us and we all need to be corralled into these electric cars that they're not ready to put us into, or they would just destroy everything. People will starve if they get their way with these electric cars. And just mark my words. We are not, that's not ready for prime time yet. But anyway, the arrogance of thinking that it is just little old us and our SUVs and our travel from, you know, here to Atlanta occasionally is destroying the entire planet is just absolutely ridiculous. This story about wild temperature fluctuations on Neptune is just a great thing. Here's my strategy when I talk to people who disagree with me on something. I ask questions. I don't go, look, dummy. Here you go, dummy. You see how stupid you are? Every planet has wild temperature fluctuations. What do you think, the Neptunians are doing something up there? There aren't even any people. I mean, I don't approach things that way, but this is a great thing. I'm going to send it to a couple of people that I know who are not freaks about climate change, but they do believe and we need to do some things and we need to move to electric cars. And, some of these things I'm going to say, what's your take on this? Does this provoke any thought in you that maybe we don't really know that this is scientists in a respected scientific journal saying we're confused, but they seem to know exactly, what do they tell you? 97% of all scientists agree that man-made climate change is a threat to the planet. Well, that's interesting because They're confused by this. It's another planet in the same solar system, right? If they're so sure about this one, how can they be confused about another one? They obviously know what intergalactic temperatures should be at all times. Within, like I say, it's like a tenth of 1 degree. They know what things should be. This is a great conversation starter. I'm going to have some fun with this one. And maybe somebody will tell me something that I haven't considered. I'm no rocket surgeon. There's no doubt about that. And I certainly don't know everything there is to know about interstellar travel of planets and weather patterns. But what I do know is that the universe is vast. Anybody gets that reference, I'll give you a buck. And we don't know what's going on. And for these busybodies who just got everything, these are the same people that just got everything wrong on COVID. Everything from plexiglass to masks to lockdowns to not being able to go out and exercise. I mean, they got everything 180 degrees wrong. But they're just absolutely sure when it comes to the climate change stuff. This Neptune article, I think, is one of the best pieces I've ever seen to just get people thinking and let them think on it. You don't have to force it on them. Just ask them what they think about it. Is there any possibility that maybe Earth is subjected to the same forces that Neptune is, one of our neighbors, that is causing fluctuations in our own temperature? Is that a possibility in your mind? And they might say, no, it's different. I ask them to explain how. That's when you'll get a long period of silence and they'll change the subject. Anyway, that's all the time I got today. Hope I see you tonight at the Americans for Prosperity thing. If not, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.